It's a momentous occasion to get a new vehicle, I'll tell you that. And you know how I know I made the right choice,
Bill? How do you know this?
For days, I really have been looking up and, like, if I'm walking down Michigan Avenue, I look at every single vehicle to go, oh, do I like the look of that?
Yeah.
I just ran outside today, and I did not look at any other car.
Is that right?
So I made up my mind. I got a Toyota Highlander.
Yeah.
I love it. And Tom Appel is on the line with us, Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher and Editor for Consumer Guide Daily Drive, CG Daily Drive. And Tom, I talked to you yesterday, right? Because I was trying to determine what kind of car to buy.
Tom's your like your consigliere. Like if you have a question, Tom is there. He's your go-to.
I honestly looked everywhere and checked specs and just you got to go with what you need, what you want. I couldn't see myself in a minivan. And then I came in and I was all excited to tell Bill I bought a car and I said, but I leased it. And he goes, oh.
I was disappointed,
Tom. You leased it?
I was disappointed.
Leasing is not such a bad deal anymore. I've never leased a car. This is my first lease.
Mm-hmm.
Should I feel guilty about it?
No. And this is in Illinois. Lots of people are leasing for the first time this year.
Because they changed the rule on the...
Yeah.
It used
to
be... Yeah, you would have to pay the full tax if you were leasing, and they altered that at the end of the year, right?
Yeah, if you negotiated the price of your car down to $35,000, you pay tax on the full $35,000, whether you leased it or purchased it. And the new law is that the tax on leases now is just on the total amount of your down payment and your payments, which can cut your lease price, you know, by 40, 50, 60%.
That is a huge savings.
The tax rate. I'm sorry, not the lease price.
Right.
Okay, and here's the thing. It's probably a little too expensive for me to purchase. Just, the payments were phenomenal to do a long purchase.
Right.
So we looked at the leasing for 3 years. You have an option to buy at the end of it. If you love the car, you can. What my husband was saying is, we have purchased all of our cars, and it is nice to have this little free grace period where you don't have any car payments, but then that car is not running well where we don't trust it to take on long road trips. So there's something to be said for getting a vehicle you trust every 3 years. The only thing is it's like you're paying a rental car company to rent a car for the rest of your life.
No, you're exactly right. And I think one of the cool things about a lease, if you go that route, is that you have the warranty for that full period of time, too. So you never have a vehicle that's out of warranty, and you have a vehicle that's new, so it probably doesn't need much warranty. So you're in a pretty good shape. The only really dramatic downside to a lease is it's expensive to break. You sort of have to promise to keep that for 2 or 3 years. And secondarily, you have nothing at the end. So you do have this period of time, 3 months before your lease ends, where you have to do something. And you have to do it relatively quickly.
So either purchase that car, trade it in for a new one to lease,
right,
or buy a new car.
Right.
Right.
And Tom, there's an additional thing on the downside, and that is this. Wendy wants to use the car to drive to Nashville with the family and then occasional family trips to Peoria. But if you're getting 12,000 miles a year, that's 1,000 miles a month, obviously, you use up a lot of those miles on trips like that.
Yeah, you can rack them up pretty quickly, and that's something that people have to be aware of. Depending on the terms of the lease, extra miles are 20 to 25 cents penalty when you go over for the total amount of your lease. So
that can be a lot.
Expensive. That can be a lot of money.
Yeah.
But we also have two cars, and if we're getting close to that 12,000 mark, we'll say, you know, we're not...
Right, we're walking to Nashville.
No, but we take two road trips a year, maybe three.
Right, but even at two or three, I don't know the exact mileage between here and Nashville.
Like
about 8 million
yeah,
miles, roughly. So if you take two
roughly
or three trips there a year...
We go once.
Oh, okay. Well, once
and then Peoria.
Bad. Yeah.
That's what I mean. And the other thing is when we traded in our old Jeep, it was literally smoking when we drove it in to trade it in. And luckily, we had worked out a little bit of an arrangement before. You know, we just gave the year. We said it had some rust, blah, blah, blah. And so they gave us a quote. And then
Ms. Snyder, your car's on fire.
Well, it cooled down eventually.
Forgot to mention that.
But so you say you have nothing to turn in at the end of a lease where you do at the end of a purchase. But, I mean, really, it was worth $1,200 for us. So
yeah,
is it really... Do you really have that much after the end of the terms of a purchase and the depreciation?
Not in this case, no. Yeah, and depreciation's a killer, too. And the thing about a lease, too, is you know what the depreciation rate is. You're paying that. That's built in. So there's no surprises.
Would it almost have been better for Wendy to donate the car and get the tax break on it that way?
Only if they really like smoking cars.
Oh, right.
If your tax bracket is 25%, then you're getting 25% of the value of that vehicle.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Essentially as a tax break. So it's almost always better to try to sell it outright. But I know a lot of people that are really lazy. I work with most of them who just donate their cars.
But if you're selling the car to a smoker, they would want a smoking car. You have something in common with your auto.
No one wants your car smoking exactly. more than you do.
No, all right.
Okay?
I get that. Explain this to us, Tom, because I said to Wendy, I knew she was going in, and I said, leave yourself way more extra time there at the dealership. She knew she was going to buy the car, but I said, leave yourself a lot of extra time, and how long did it take you to get the car?
All right, this was a rare instance where they only had one finance guy. We went in at 6:15.
Yep.
And we got out of there at 12:17 at night.
So 6+ hours.
Yeah.
Why does it? I mean, in this case, it's because there was only one guy in the finance office. Most dealerships only have one or two people in their finance office.
They had three offices. There was one guy, and I'm telling you, everyone came in. And we got there at 6:15, but we were looking around. We were figuring out exactly what we wanted and negotiating a little bit. And then other people were coming in. And here's the thing that's so sad. If you work at a car dealership, they close their doors at 9 o'clock, but if somebody comes in at 8:35 and wants to buy a car,
right,
they're not going to lose that sale. So everybody was coming in and buying a car last night.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I've actually done that with a friend where we went to go buy his car at about 8:50.
Nice. Oh my God.
I bet they love that.
Well, it cuts through the negotiating period pretty quickly.
Sure it does. Actually, that's a good tactic, isn't it?
It's kind of a good tactic, yeah.
Although not for us, because we were there till 12:17 in the morning.
Yeah, that's
too late.
I couldn't even believe it.
Tom, the last two that we've bought, I said to my wife, and this is true, we got in and out when we bought our house in less time than when we bought our cars. That shouldn't be.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's almost as much paperwork now.
There is.
Buying the car. Yeah, there's so many things that they have to have you sign. There's all these legal documents they have to have you sign. And then additionally, when you go into to see the F&I guy, they often try to sell you stuff too, and that takes time.
Right. Little additional add-ons, you know, here's your warranty, but if you want to extend it a little bit, you can buy this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's gap insurance. If you total the car and then your insurance company doesn't give you enough, then you're out that money.
Yeah.
So that is something you think about. And then there's other insurance. It is a big decision.
Yeah.
But with leasing, you can probably get a better car than you would be able to afford if you purchased it. Wouldn't you agree to that, Tom?
Yeah, no, you absolutely can. I just did some, you know, when I found out we were talking about leasing today, I just did some checking. And one of the companies that's famous for leasing is BMW, for example. And right now they have a lease on a very base 3 Series, that's their compact sedan, where the payments are, and there's all sorts of asterisks on this, but the payments are $320 a month. If you were trying to buy that car in 3 years, your payments are almost $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
So it's just dramatically less cash up front. So, yeah, it's something you can absolutely do with less cash.
Tom, have you ever seen this tactic? I've seen this more than once now. When you've bought the car and they're trying to sell you on the extended warranty and you tell them, no, I don't need it right now. And they go, oh, I can understand that. Let me show you something. And then they reach in their drawer and they show you a picture of a similar car to yours. And they go, this was a guy. I had this guy in a year ago. He didn't buy the extended warranty. 2 days after his warranty, he got hit by a bus and it cost him $6 million to have his car fixed. But that's fine. You don't need it if you don't want it. It's like a little bit of a scare tactic. You've seen that, right?
Close to that. I've seen close to that.
Yeah.
One of the things they want to do, too, with the extended warranty is if you buy it while you're in the office, they can roll it into your loan. So it's the easiest time to sell it to you. Because it's like, we can do this warranty, and it only adds $10 a month, something like that.
Yeah.
So it seems like a very small additional purchase. And you're just getting over the fact that you just spent $40,000. So what's $10 a month? So it's a great time to hit somebody up with something like that.
How do places that are not your original car dealership, because my warranty is going to end in a couple of months, but I keep getting calls from other places that are not my dealership saying, hey, we know that your warranty's coming up. Here's an offer for you. How do they have that information?
That's a great question. Because I get those calls all the time on my wife's car.
Yeah.
Yes, someone got the information. But I think that the date of purchase of your vehicle is public record, and they can get that from the Secretary of State.
Because they're always very gray, because I always say, I won't say the name of my dealership, but I go, is this the guy, are you the guys over it? And they go, they're very noncommittal about that. Yeah, it's not important. What we're saying is your warranty's about to expire, you know?
But there are home warranties that you can get that cover your home, so why isn't there an auto warranty that covers your car regardless of where you purchased it?
Well, Tom, go ahead. But
there is.
Anyone,
I know.
Yeah, anyone can sell you one. Yeah, but yes. I just don't know how they know all that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, there's companies that can, anyone can sell you a car warranty. And
right.
then the problem with car warranties that you purchase that aren't backed by your original manufacturer is that you may be limited as to where you can get them fulfilled.
Oh.
Some dealerships might try to sell you a warranty that isn't from the factory, isn't from the manufacturer of the vehicle, and you may have to come back to that dealership all the time to have that work done. So your best bet always, in my opinion, is to go back to an original manufacturer warranty if you want to go with an extended warranty.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. And real quickly, we have a phone call from Dave. Are you a lesser, a leaser, a buyer? What are you?
I'm a lesser. In fact, I leased a car yesterday. I just wanted to point out that if you negotiate the mileage ahead of time. So I negotiated 17,000 miles a year into my lease, and it's a whole lot cheaper to do that in the front end of the lease than it is to pay the penalty at the end.
And that makes your lease payment go up just a little bit paying the penalty for going over accidentally.
Absolutely. So what the dealer or the leasing company is trying to do is just figure out what the car is going to be worth at the end. And so obviously if you have more mileage on it, it's going to be worth a little bit less, so you'll pay for that. So that's the way it works.
Well, thank you. Happy travels. What'd you get?
I work for a lot of car dealers, so I don't want to.
Okay,
that's right.
Out just one that I.
All right, enjoy.
I got a Chevrolet Malibu.
I love those.
Those
they
are
have
nice.
Come a
beautiful.
Long way.
Yeah.
Have your fun in it. Okay. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Dave the Lesser. I think he's one of the apostles, isn't he?
That was James.
James the Lesser.
And James the Greater.
Right.
And so, Tom, there is a price that they put down that how much the car will be worth after the 3 years of leasing, and we can choose to buy it at that point. And is that ever a good idea to purchase that car?
For the residual value? Yeah, if you really like the car. And if that price makes sense to you, what happens in the case of a lot of vehicles, especially luxury vehicles, that residual value can be subvented, and it's a form of incentivizing the vehicle. So if the vehicle should be worth $22,000 at the end of the lease, a manufacturer might say that's $23,000 or $24,000, and that's a way to put effectively a rebate or some sort of incentive on the vehicle, and that lowers the price. That price may not be ideal then, because that would be slightly inflated at the end of the purchase. So you might kind of want to follow that through the process. If you don't buy that car at that rate, you might want to see if the dealer keeps it and puts it on sale and then just buy it as a used car.
Tom,
great advice.
It's solid advice. I know this is a question you're probably asked constantly, but I need to know because I can't figure it out. Why can you still not buy a car on a Sunday? Isn't that crazy?
Question.
That should be
crazy.
One of their busiest days.
They used to be able to.
Yeah.
And because my husband owned, his family owned a Chevy dealer, McInerney Chevrolet, and they used to be open on Sundays.
Not anymore.
And there were various dealers that wanted to work on Sundays. And from my understanding, there were other dealers that didn't want to work on Sundays. And rumor has it that there was some kind of damage done to cars in the lots, and you're
really?
Going to stay open on Sunday when we're not going to stay open on Sunday? I don't think so.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. I live in an area where there's a lot of very small, privately owned used car lots.
Yeah.
And I'm keenly aware that they're doing business on Sunday and probably just signing the paperwork on Monday.
Oh.
Is it a
state law or a federal law to not have a car dealership open on Sunday?
Oh, no, it's just Illinois and
Illinois?
A few various states. It's not. I mean, you go somewhere else. Sunday's a great day to buy a car.
I would think it'd be the best day to buy a car.
I don't get it.
And that's why dealerships are so busy on Saturday, because that's when people are free.
Yep. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Tom, it's always fun to talk to you. Always very informative. A couple of websites. Consumer Guide Automotive's publisher, Tom Mattel. You want to go to cgdailydrive.com and then also consumerguide.com. You can read Tom's work there. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
I love my new car.
Yep.
Can't wait to get
Doesn't that feel nice? All right, we'll take a quick break, a little bit more show, and then Ro and Anna will be on to tell you what they have. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.